This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
In search of a motive. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, October 3rd. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Authorities say they're still trying to understand why a retiree and real estate investor would carry out the worst mass shooting in U.S. history.
Meanwhile, a vigil last night for the 59 killed and more than 500 wounded in Sunday night's massacre at a concert in Las Vegas.
Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Tom Petty has died at the age of 66. He had just finished a 40th anniversary tour with his band.
And the big bills facing insurance companies after five natural disasters the past few weeks.
We've had three major hurricanes in the Atlantic and two earthquakes in Mexico, and so that's a really high number of clustered large events, and it's gotten quite expensive for the insurance industry, and the total damage borne by the insurance companies could be more than $100 billion.
Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Friedman on what's ahead for insurance companies. Might they stop doing business in a place like Puerto Rico? She's here in about 20 minutes. There remains no clear motive for the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history. Investigators are trying to understand why a retiree, an avid gambler, opened fire on concertgoers in Las Vegas Sunday night, killing 59 people and injuring more than 500 others. The suspected gunman, 64-year-old Stephen Paddock, killed himself as SWAT units approached his 32nd floor hotel room in the Mandalay Bay. He'd been firing relentlessly on the festival from about four football fields away. His brother Eric in Orlando, Florida, is just as puzzled as everyone else.
Steve had nothing to do with any political organization, religious organization, no white supremacist, nothing, as far as I know.
Police said they recovered 23 firearms in Mr. Paddock's hotel room. At least one was thought to have been rigged to allow it to fire more rapidly. They found another 19 guns along with thousands of rounds of ammo and some explosives inside his home in Mesquite, Nevada. A vigil was held last night at the Guardian Angel Cathedral on the Las Vegas Strip. A gong was sounded over and over in front of about 300 mourners at a multi-faith vigil just one day after the deadliest mass shooting in American history. At least a few of the people at the vigil had been at the festival when the gunshots began, and most knew someone who had. USA Today says mourners sat among tall stained glass windows and colorful murals as they listened to religious leaders from the city's Catholic, Jewish, Protestant, and Muslim communities.
Our hearts are devastated for the 515 plus that are in hospital beds or that are wounded. So, Lord, we cry out right now that you'll be there for them. Like, there's no words that we can say except to cry out to God.
Stephen Sisolak, Clark County Commission Chairman, praised ordinary citizens who had responded so generously that he says now you can't get an appointment to donate blood until next week. Mr. Sisolak also announced that a GoFundMe page designed to raise money for the families of the victims had raised more than $1.8 million. Was the mass shooting in Las Vegas preventable at all? Can copycat crimes be expected? Questions for Alex Del Carmen, who heads up the School of Criminology, Criminal Justice, and Strategic Studies at Tarleton State University in Fort Worth, Texas. He also works with police departments from coast to coast on training and tactics. Alex, seems authorities got a little break since one report said the shooter set off a smoke detector in his room from the smoke from the shooting.
Yeah, they got lucky, and at the same time, you know, training kicks in as well, Gordon. As you know, law enforcement professionals are trained to be able to spot, you know, where the shooters are coming from, and be obviously at that point they have to go into training mode to figure out how they're going to break through the doors and how they're going to be, you know, what they're going to find. Is it going to be booby trapped or not? So there's a lot of it that goes on. And it happens so quickly that most people don't realize how fast it is.
Man, I mean, can you prevent something like this?
You know, it's really hard to do that. I mean, at the end of the day, people have been talking about metal detectors and this and the other. And a lot of the people that were actually at the concert were patted down. You know, they did have security out there, but obviously the victims were secure. You know, the offender was not, you know, other than having presidential detail type of security where you have Secret Service basically go through each building and each door and each possible venue close to the event. I mean, there's really no way to prevent it from happening.
It does seem like Las Vegas PD and the first responders are getting a lot of credit here.
As they should. You know, they did a terrific job being able to, I mean, this is happening. Imagine, this is a live scene. There are people dead on the ground. There are people running away from the shooter. You really don't know what you're facing, what type of caliber of weaponry this person has. This person is being helped by others or not, whether that is terrorism. So all of these questions go on all at the same time. Within a matter of minutes, these law enforcement officers, these professionals, have to make a decision of exactly how this is going to go down and what they're able and capable of doing. So, yeah, they do deserve a lot of credit.
Man, I can't imagine what that was like for some of these cops and sheriff's deputies on the scene. It's dark. This guy's shooting from 32 floors up. You generally have no idea where the bullets are coming from. And some of these witnesses are saying, man, we're all lying down on the ground taking cover, and these guys are just standing there like targets, you know, searching for where the bullets are originating.
Yeah, you know, for the past few years, everyone's been quick at pointing fingers about police officers doing bad things and the other. But at the end of the day, this is what makes them heroes, right? So when everybody runs away from a scene, police officers rush towards it in order to be able to protect and save lives. And so a lot of kudos go to them, you know, and quite honestly, this guy would have taken out a lot more people. As catastrophic and as awful as it was that over 50 people died and over 400 people have been injured, at the end of the day, if law enforcement had not responded, who knows what that body count would have been like.
We're speaking with Alex Del Carmen. He's the executive director of the School of Criminology, Criminal Justice, and Strategic Studies at Tarleton State University in Fort Worth, Texas. We're talking about the mass shooting in Las Vegas. Do you suspect or do you tell when you're doing some training that there could be a copycat in the midst following this?
There's no question, and we worry about that. And that's what we try not to glorify the person, you know, the offender. In this case, you know, I refuse to mention his name. I refuse to talk about his profile because many people actually, you know, they see this and they're, oh, yeah, this guy is getting all kinds of attention. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go out there and do something similar. And that is what we fear in the law enforcement profession, is individuals that want to copycat it. They want to also go down in history as being the, you know, the biggest offender that crime has seen in its history of the U.S. And so, you know, we do concern ourselves with that. And, of course, in the back of my mind, as you know, and we've talked in your program before about terrorism, you know, I worry that terrorists are also going to learn from this, and they're going to see how vulnerable we are and perhaps plan their next attack the same way.
Yeah, obviously, this is not the first music event, because we saw this happen in Manchester. Are there lessons here for law enforcement or for anybody?
Yeah, I don't know that we know what those lessons are at this point, because this is so fresh and so preliminary, and situation on the ground right now is fluid in the sense that, you know, crime scene is still being secured. They were, you know, as a few hours ago, still having individuals that are being hospitalized as a result of this. And so, but I imagine that at some point, you know, law enforcement folks in Las Vegas and other parts of the U.S., the FBI included, are going to sit down and they're going to start remapping their response time, how they were able to channel through communication and how they were able to respond so quickly. And my guess is there will be a lot of good things worthy of replicating. There may be others that there are willing and perhaps going to consider changing at some point.
Thanks. Alex Del Carmen heads up the School of Criminology, Criminal Justice, and Strategic Studies at Tarleton State University. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Tom Petty has died. You know him for hits like Refugee, Free Fallin', and American Girl. He suffered cardiac arrest and was found unconscious at his home in Malibu early yesterday. He could not be revived. Mr. Petty carved a career as a solo artist as well as with his band The Heartbreakers and as part of supergroup The Traveling Wilburys. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2002.
I thank this rock and roll for the freedom it's given me. And I thank the fans for such a wonderful life. And I thank God for all of it.
He and the Heartbreakers had just completed a 40th anniversary tour. The band was scheduled to perform two dates in New York next month. Petty formed the Heartbreakers in the mid-70s, but it wasn't until the band's third album, Damn the Torpedoes, in 1979 that their music really took off with hits such as Refugee and Don't Do Me Like That. Rock icon Tom Petty dead at 66. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the victims just kept coming in cars and ambulances waiting four or five deep. From the walking wounded, they arrived in droves. Trauma surgeon Saeed Saqib was on duty as wounded people came to his Las Vegas hospital after a gunman opened fire from a hotel window Sunday night.
The whole gamut, head, chest, belly, extremities. So we had all kinds of injuries, orthopedic injuries, vascular injuries, intra-abdominal and chest injuries.
Meanwhile, authorities are trying to determine a motive for the deadliest massacre in U.S. history. They say shooter Stephen Paddock had a penchant for guns, high-limit video poker, and real estate deals. Paddock's brother Eric says he can't understand any of this.
Something just incredibly wrong happened to my brother. And this happened.
A total of 42 guns were found in Paddock's hotel room and house. He had a recent live-in girlfriend and two ex-wives and seemed to live a comfortable life in a Nevada retirement community. President Trump today will meet with some of the 3.4 million Puerto Ricans struggling to recover from Hurricane Maria as criticism of the federal government's sluggish response continues.
It's been amazing what's been done in a very short period of time on Puerto Rico. There's never been a piece of land that we've known that was so devastated.
The president's expected to meet with first responders, local officials, and some of the residents struggling to recover from a hurricane that, in the president's words, left the U.S. territory flattened. White House officials have reportedly begun examining emails associated with a third and previously unreported email account on Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump's private domain. Politico reports that hundreds of emails have been sent since January from White House addresses to accounts on the Kushner family domain. The existence of additional email accounts raises new questions about the extent of personal email use by the couple during their time as White House aides. Airbus is working on a new generation of black boxes that may help authorities piece together what happened in the event of a plane disaster. The recorder, due to take to the skies in 2019, will be releasable, meaning that in the event of a water crash, it would float to the surface. The new box would reveal the plane's location within seconds and transmit updated location data for 6 days.
Does seem like something that is sorely needed.
Indeed.
Thank you, Jen. It is 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into Tuesday. One of the most expensive years for natural disasters on record is likely to cause widespread losses for insurance firms in upcoming quarterly earnings and shrink their capital cushions. Five natural disasters in the past few weeks. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Friedman. Nicole set this up.
So in the past couple of weeks, we've had three major hurricanes in the Atlantic and two earthquakes in Mexico. And so that's a really high number of clustered large events, and it's gotten quite expensive for the insurance industry. And so the estimates are still really, really preliminary. We won't know the full extent of damage for months, especially in Puerto Rico, which is still pretty devastated by Hurricane Maria. But it is thought that the total damage borne by the insurance companies could be more than $100 billion. So Maria alone in Puerto Rico could cost in the tens of billions, and then Harvey, which hit Texas in August, is expected to cost insurance companies at least $10 billion, and then Irma in Florida and the Caribbean could cost another $20 or $30 billion, and then the Mexican earthquakes could each cost about $1 billion each. And so adding it all up, it could quickly go over $100 billion, some estimates say.
Goodness gracious. All right. So you said, too, the insurance companies actually might see this as a silver lining because they might be able to raise prices next time around.
Yeah. So in the commercial insurance arena, so providing insurance to companies, they do think that there will be some higher prices going forward for those companies buying property insurance. And this has been, there's been a trend for a couple of years of falling prices because there's been a lot of capital in the insurance industry, a lot of money looking to sell insurance. And then at the same time, we haven't had a major hurricane or event like this in a couple of years. And so there's been less payouts. And so it's really been a buyer's market. And they think some analysts and companies are saying that could change now and it could become more of a seller's market and companies could start, or insurance companies could start raising prices.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Friedman. Her piece is called Hurricanes and Earthquakes Rack Up Huge Bill for Insurers. Do you think that given the severity that we've had this year, some insurance companies might pull out and say, you know what, we think this has been a rough season and there might be more to come. We don't want to be in this line of work anymore, or we're not going to insure those folks, say, on coasts?
So we might see them pulling out of specific markets or regions. We think definitely Puerto Rico is going to get a second look from some companies, that there has been an assumption in previous years that, oh, you know, you can buy property insurance for all of your U.S. properties and then just throw in Puerto Rico on top of that. And now companies are saying, oh, no, no, it looks like the risk there is much bigger than we realized, and we're really going to have to take a second look. And if not pull out of the Puerto Rico market, then definitely charge higher rates in order to provide that insurance. And we might see the same thing in Florida or in Texas, kind of along the Gulf Coast. But we probably won't see any insurance companies completely pulling out, because they have had a really good couple of years where there haven't been a lot of disasters, and so they do have the money to kind of handle these situations, even though they'll be expensive.
Thanks, Nicole. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicole Friedman. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, October 3rd. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Still no motive uncovered for the massacre in Las Vegas. Meanwhile, lights turned off at the Empire State Building and Eiffel Tower last night to pay tribute to the victims. Rock legend Tom Petty has died at 66. That's a song you're hearing now. President Trump visits Puerto Rico today. Tesla badly missed a production goal of 1,500 Model 3 cars per quarter. Wild card baseball tonight. Chiefs beat the Skins in Monday Night Football. And Tom Petty songs in movies. That story in about 20 minutes. Regarding the Las Vegas massacre, what's happening in the mind of somebody who sets out to cause this much pain and carnage on fellow human beings? Analysis from Dr. John Huber, clinical psychologist and chairman of a group called Mainstream Mental Health. John, what do you say about the mindset of somebody who might do this?
Well, we fall back to what we kind of already know, but he doesn't fit that normal terrorist kind of model. But when we look at terrorists, they're typically driven by ideology of either religious or political nature. When you have an outlier like this, someone who doesn't have a history of aligning that way, you know, we really have to dig into who and what was going on in his life. I think there's so much left to know at this point. When we talk to the woman who was living with him since January, when we can finally talk to her, we can go through all his documentation and his property and stuff, I think we're going to have a lot clearer insight. But this is a man who wanted to, he was saying something. I mean, this was premeditated. He targeted this group. I don't know if he targeted them specific yet, but it was an opportunistic event. He's been there since the 28th. He, you know, obviously scoped this out. There was only two viable options for people to get out of there. I think a lot of the people who got hurt were trying to climb, you know, 10-foot fences. And he made a statement by going out and taking his own life. So we have a lot yet to learn from this man.
Do you suspect that we will ultimately find out that signs were missed?
I think so. And the people who are closest to him probably, you know, aren't in a position to identify those or felt somehow like they couldn't say anything to anybody.
Okay, yeah.
Now, he communicated with his family, but he, you know, was not close to his family. They lived in Florida, and he would talk to them every once in a while, every couple of weeks and stuff. But, you know, and they got, oh, everything's great kind of story from him. So I don't believe the family had any kind of insight whatsoever, period.
We're speaking with Dr. John Huber, clinical psychologist, also chairman of Mainstream Mental Health. We're talking about the psychology behind a mass murder like what happened in Las Vegas. Is it automatic or assumed that somebody who does this is not in their right state of mind? Is there definitely something wrong with somebody who does this, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. You know, when we go back to those terrorists, they're just driven by an ideology. In fact, most terrorists that we've seen historically, if we were to have done a psychological evaluation on them, they would not have stood out at all. So I think this gentleman had something else going on, again, because he doesn't fit that typical mold. But until we find out more, I really don't want to speculate this early in the process.
How about the folks who were there and witnessed this? What about the psychological impact on them?
It's going to be significant. I think we're going to see a lot of people coming out of there with everything from survivor's guilt and depression to full-blown post-traumatic stress disorder.
What percentage of folks do you think might experience something like PTSD?
You know, I think we may see even nationwide as high as maybe 2 or 3% of our population that are affected by this and may actually get something like post-traumatic stress disorder from this.
What are lessons to be learned here, if any, when suddenly you have the largest largest death toll of any mass killing in the United States?
Well, one of the things I don't want is for people to stop living their lives. So what we've got to do is when we go into places, even your everyday, you know, the restaurant your family eats at every week, when you walk in there, look at avenues of escape, ways to protect yourself, hide your family, get things moved. Don't be hypervigilant. Don't be like, oh my God, we got to mark this off and see how many steps it's going to be and all that. You know, just be aware of your surroundings. And you should do that as a general practice at this point forward. I don't see not doing that, especially when you get into big social gatherings and cultural experiences. We need to be aware of our surroundings, period.
Thanks, John. Dr. John Huber, clinical psychologist. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories that you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, Gordon, when your wallet goes missing, we all assume that there's little chance that we'll be getting it back. That's especially true if the wallet went missing as part of a robbery nearly 50 years ago. That's not the case for a New Jersey man who was reunited with his wallet that was stolen during a burglary at his parents' house in 1970. 78-year-old Dennis Helmer received a call recently from a man named Don Williams, who told him a wallet containing documents with his name on them was found in the ceiling of his home by a contractor. The wallet's contents are like a time capsule, including Helmer's 1957 Selective Service card, a St. Christopher medal, a 1956 receipt for his $168 tuition payment to Drexel University, just chew on that for a moment, $168 college tuition payment, and photos including a snapshot of Helmer posing with his high school prom date. No money, though, as far as we can tell. The funny part is Helmer says he never even knew the wallet was missing in the first place until Williams called him about it.
Is that right?
That is odd. I guess you know, that stuff wasn't super-duper important to him at the time.
I guess, or perhaps at the age he lost it, he had moved on from the need for those documents, I guess?
Yeah, perhaps.
That's really something. But you're right, $168 tuition payment to Drexel University.
That's the part that struck me.
Right.
The whole thing.
That is now the cost of a one-week meal plan, probably.
Yeah, you can get a couple of books for that.
Right.
And Gordon, a young boy in Argentina is making news for the unusual sounds coming out of his mouth. The boy reportedly swallowed a piece from a pet toy recently, and if a video posted by an emergency room doctor is to be believed, he now can't stop squeaking.
Hello, ma'am.
That's the unnamed 8-year-old.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. The boy's 8-year-old, it appeared, sounded like a chew toy every time he breathed out. The doctor told the Huffington Post that the toy's whistle was stuck between the boy's larynx and pharynx. Thankfully, using local anesthesia, the doctor was able to remove the squeaker from the boy's throat, and he has since recovered. The doctor says he's never seen anything like that in his life and posted the video to Facebook to warn people about the dangers of swallowing things, and it might work, as the clip has now been viewed well over 9 million times.
Now, did the doctor post that on Facebook really as a warning, or was the doctor merely trying to generate some publicity for his business?
An advertisement, perhaps? Well, I mean, he was quick with that video, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Putting that right up there.
And the kid's 8.
Yes.
He's got something stuck in his trachea.
Yes.
Between the larynx and the pharynx, yes, as you point out.
Yes.
Then the first thing you do is pull out a phone and record it.
Look, well, you've been in hospitals before, Gordon. You know that it takes a little while to get things moving sometimes. There is a lot of sitting around. Even if you're in an emergency room, there is a lot of sitting around. Wow. So they might have had a little bit of time on their hands. I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
And he asked them to do it again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Do it again.
And then they looped it, actually. They looped it like 3-4 times on the video, too.
So. Goodness. If I was a parent, I don't think I'd be happy if I was that kid's parent.
Yeah, mom was super nervous, according to the description of the video.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Very difficult time. While the sun is shining in Las Vegas, it is a very dark and black day.
Las Vegas Mayor Carolyn Goodman, the residents of Vegas have banded together to help the victims of Sunday's mass shooting, lining up for hours to donate blood as people around the world collectively donated over $2 million to help with relief efforts. Lines started forming at the crack of dawn at blood banks operated by United Blood Services across the metro area, according to the New York Times, while hundreds of people dropped off food and other supplies at the Thomas and Mack Center on the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Local officials also set up a GoFundMe page to help victims just hours after the gunman opened fire on that country music concert, killing at least 59 and sending more than 500 others to the hospital. Fox News says even celebrities heeded the call to help, including Mike Tyson, Kid Rock, and the country music group Florida Georgia Line. NFL team the Oakland Raiders, who were scheduled to move to Las Vegas in 2020, donated the highest amount, $50,000. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, police are seeking clues to explain why a retiree with a pension for gambling but no criminal record set up a sniper's nest in a high-rise Las Vegas hotel and poured gunfire onto a concert below. The shooting spree from a 32nd floor window of the Mandalay Bay Hotel on the Las Vegas Strip killed at least 59 people and injured more than 500. Brian Claypool was trapped in a room with others near the concert stage.
Police officers screamed, "Go, go." And I rallied everybody out of that room. I was determined. I said to myself, these girls aren't going to die. I'm not going to die. I need to get home to see my daughter. This is not happening. Not happening.
The gunman, 64-year-old Stephen Paddock, left no immediate hint of his motive. His brother Eric says his brother did own guns.
Yes, he had a couple of guns. I mean, it's legal to own a couple of guns in the United States. He did not own machine guns that I knew of in any way, shape, or form.
Paddock had 34 guns in the hotel room and another 19 at his home in Mesquite. Rocker Tom Petty, whose guitar riffs and nasal vocals grace such hits as Refugee, Free Fallen, and American Girl, has died at the age of 66 following a heart attack. In this clip from 2014, Petty said his songs sometimes literally fell out of the air.
Magic is a trick, but this is truly magic because there's no trick involved and it's there it is.
Petty carved a career as a solo artist, as well as with his band, The Heartbreakers, and as part of the supergroup, The Traveling Wilburys. Petty and The Heartbreakers last played 3 dates in late September in Los Angeles. The University of Louisville Athletic Association's board has voted to begin the process of terminating men's basketball coach Rick Pitino for cause. Such a vote would mean that the school wouldn't have to pay its former head coach his $44 million buyout. Pitino has been tied to a plan to bring a 5-star player to the school with $100,000 in cash.
Wow. That would be a lift off the contract.
Yeah.
Or off
payroll. That's what we're talking about here now is money.
Right. Goodness. Thank you, Jen. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. As with many musicians, Tom Petty's music provides a soundtrack for many fans' lives. USA Today has a rundown. Some songs, such as 1989's I Won't Back Down, have become inspirational anthems all by themselves. Petty also earned the ultimate stage, halftime of Super Bowl 42. His songs have graced many soundtracks, starting in the late 70s all the way up to the present with King's Highway in this year's Cars 3. In 1996's Jerry Maguire, Tom Cruise's title character, fiddles with the car radio dial to find the right song. He actually passes up the Rolling Stones before finding and singing along joyously to Petty's Free Fallin'. In 1991's Oscar-winning The Silence of the Lambs, a young woman sings along to the driving beat of American Girl just before events take a grim turn. You Don't Know How It Feels was featured in the 2002 Adam Sandler movie Mr. Deeds. Petty and the Heartbreakers recorded the soundtrack also for 1996's She's the One, which stars Jennifer Aniston and Cameron Diaz. Again, Tom Petty gone at 66. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.